Hello, everybody. This is producer Andrew Colvett filling in for Charlie Kirk. Always honored to be in the seat with you guys. We have an action-packed episode of the Charlie Kirk Show today. It's incredible. We cover a lot of ground. I'm not going to lie. Hold on to your seats. The buckle up thing is totally apt today. We cover Turning Point USA's new no vax mandate on campus campaign. It's rolling out nationwide. Charlie was on Tucker Carlson last night talking about it. Big story. Then, of course, almost on cue, Charlie was trending on Twitter. You're not going to want to miss why. It's hilarious, but it's great. He told the truth. That's all. That's probably all you need to know. I'll tell you the rest in just a second. We cover January 6th, and guess what? We name names on who shot Ashley Babbitt. Talk about WAPO fact check that'll have you rolling, as it did me, because we all knew that the Democrats were lying. Nevertheless, here we go, guys. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
As you know, my friend Mike Lindell has a passion to help everyone get the best sleep of your life. He didn't stop by simply creating the best pillow. Mike created the new Giza Dream Bed Sheets. They look and feel great, which means an even better night's sleep for me, which is what's crucial for my busy schedule. Mike found the world's best cotton called Giza. It's ultra soft and breathable, but extremely durable. Mike's Giza sheets come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. The first night you sleep on Giza sheets, you will never want to sleep on anything else. Giza Dream Sheets come in a variety of sizes and colors. Mike is making a special offer for my listeners. You receive two for the one low price plus free shipping. Go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio listener square and use promo code Kirk. There you'll find not only this amazing offer, but also deep discounts on all MyPillow products, including the MyPillow mattress topper, MyPillow towel sets, and so much more. Call 1-800-875-0425. Use the promo code Kirk. Go to MyPillow.com and make sure you use the promo code KIRK.
Here we go. So, guys, I have to tell you, I always think it's fun that, you know, that Charlie's gone and he's off today. But, nevertheless, he's trending on Twitter. So, that's always a fun thing for us to explain to Charlie when he comes back online and we say, hey, Charlie, you know, good for you. You're trending on Twitter. So what happened? Charlie went on Tucker Carlson last night. I'm going to play some of the clips for you. Charlie went on Tucker Carlson talking about an anti-vax campaign that Turning Point USA is launching across college and high school campuses, 2,500 college and high school campuses. The backstory, as many of you in this audience are well aware, the Biden administration is in full get out the vax campaign. Meanwhile, folks are pushing back at a local grassroots level saying, hey, this is still an experimental vaccine. We don't know enough about this vaccine to be pushing it in a mandatory way on the most healthy, the least vulnerable cohort in American society, namely 18, 19, 20-year-olds. So what's the deal? Nobody was really stepping up. Turning Point USA obviously has a lot going on, but Turning Point USA decided, hey, we've got to meet the challenge of the moment. Let's launch this campaign. You can actually check it out for yourselves, turningpointusa.com/vax. I recommend everybody do that. So Charlie goes on and he calls it medical apartheid. And that is, of course, what Mediaite and all these others have grabbed a hold of. But like, folks, and we're going to play the sound for you to hear for yourself. But I just did a simple Google search. This is not deep research. This is a simple Google search of apartheid. So, of course, the first thing that comes up, I mean, this is top of the page at Google. And I don't recommend using Google, but it's important as a tool to explain to you what's actually going on here because Google is the mainstream search engine. It's basically a monopoly. It gets over 90% of search. So if anybody in the general population were to Google apartheid, it would say, historical, in South Africa, a policy or system of segregation or discrimination on the grounds of race. Okay. First bullet point, however, segregation on grounds other than race. And they use as an example, gender apartheid. Gender apartheid is their first example. So when Charlie made a comment about medical apartheid, that should not have been controversial. But nevertheless, this is the headline from the hacks over at Mediaite. Charlie Kirk declares that colleges mandating vaccinations will mean medical apartheid. Well, that's exactly what it is. So I'm going to let you hear from Charlie in his own words, medical apartheid. That's clip 58. Let's go ahead and play that clip, and I'll catch it on the backside.
At Turning Point USA, we are going to give it everything we have to make sure that students are not going to have to live in a medical apartheid because they don't want to get the vaccine. I said this earlier, and this is a big statement, but it's almost this apartheid-style open-air hostage situation. Like, oh, you can have your freedom back if you get the jab. This is unacceptable. We're going to fight back against it.
That's right. So Charlie thought it was an important enough point that he said it twice. Okay? I completely supported this. I talked with Charlie before he went on the air. We agreed that this was a very smart thing to say. And of course, the usual suspects are freaking out. Charlie, like I said, is trending on Twitter. Charlie, I'll tell you, he doesn't even care. He deleted Twitter. We have group chats, and he sort of sends his tweets, and then his team tweets for him. He doesn't even look at it. Such a cesspool, he won't even look at it. Nevertheless, I think it's hilarious that they are freaking out about something that was technically and accurately true. So what does he mean by a medical apartheid? Well, on college campuses across the country, especially at private universities, so if you're Dukes, your Cornells, things like this, it's absolutely within the purview of the university to mandate vaccines for in-person learning. Now, what they are doing, now, the schools do not have an ability to block a student who's matriculated and who's paying tuition, right? So they're skirting mandate rules because they, on their own, do not have the power to mandate vaccines. The state can. So in California, New York, they're actually mandating for public universities as well. But what they're doing in states, in red states, for example, they are skirting this by not referring to it as a mandate, but making it so onerous on those who have chosen not to get vaccinated that it's basically a mandate. It's a silly thing to even discuss, okay? Onerous how? Onerous like this. If you do not get a vaccine at a college campus in a red state that cannot by law mandate it, what they will do is they will segregate you. They will either force you to take only online classes, or if they allow you on campus, they'll make you wear a mask. They tried to do this at Arizona State University before we raised holy hell about it, and Doug Ducey ended up signing an executive order reversing this, but they tried, and it's actually a great example of what we should do. Arizona is the model for how we need to fight back, especially in red states. So what they were going to try and do at ASU is make you wear a mask even outside. And if you were going to try and attend classes in person on campus, they were going to subject you to mandatory and they were going to subject you to mandatory COVID asymptomatic tests. That's the way you would say it. So even if you were asymptomatic, they were going to subject you to these tests. And then on top of that, you were not going to be allowed to partake in certain college activities. And now ASU is like 115 when the semester starts outside. So imagine walking, long walks in between your two classes, and you've got to wear a mask in 115-degree heat just to study on campus, which you are doing with your tuition. You're paying for this service. Absolutely insane. But this is what's going on all across the country. So Charlie was absolutely right. And I wanted to take a moment to defend him because it's insane that this is even like, you know, an issue, right? So they're going after Candace Owens right now because she's publicly said that she's not taking the vaccine. Charlie and his wife Erica have publicly stated that they're not taking the vaccine. Tucker Carlson has not stated one way or the other. His point is very good as well. It's none of your darn business. Okay, I'm going to say it the nice way. It's none of your darn business. And I completely support that. At the end of the day, this is not about being pro or anti-vaccine, although we have our skepticism when it comes to this particular vaccine because it is a emergency vaccine. It is still experimental according to the CDC. There's a lot of research that's going into this mRNA vaccine and how it might even be a cytotoxin, and it latches onto lipid and fat cells, and it goes throughout your body. YouTube and all of the big tech sensors are on any clips that say these types of things, and they're pulling them down. Vaccine agnostic, if you want to get it, that's fine. We say that all the time on the show. We support your right to do so, but we will not support a mandatory vaccine. That is a line we will not cross on this show. And I'm so glad, I'm so honored that Turning Point is standing up for freedom, for the right to choose, and for healthcare privacy. It's so incredibly important, folks. So go again to tpusa.com/vax if you want to check that out. tpusa.com/vax. Now, I mentioned the case of Arizona State University and Governor Ducey. Arizona State came out and said, hey, if you're not going to get the jab, you're not going to get vaxxed, well, you're going to have to wear a mask outside in 115-degree heat. You're going to have to be subjected to randomized COVID testing, even if you're asymptomatic. You're not going to be able to study abroad. Various other things. Charlie, the team, a network of folks that we're connected with, all started tweeting, all started saying this was unacceptable. Within hours, Doug Ducey was on Twitter saying this is unacceptable. I'm going to sign an executive order ensuring that this does not happen. This is a case in point of how to push back against the radical left. And never forget, these universities are islands of totalitarianism. I recently dealt with a case in Florida. Yes, the University of Florida, where a Turning Point chapter student tried to have a cookout at a shared field. Now, technically, you're supposed to reserve the field. It's a shared field. Everybody uses it all the time for Frisbee, all this kind of stuff. They had a cookout there, but it was, you know, they were doing masks and they were handing out food with gloves and trying to, you know, do all the COVID stuff so that nobody gave them a hard time. Well, apparently some snitches, Charlie talked about snitch culture yesterday, drove by down the street, took pictures of them, sent it to the administration. Next thing they know, these students are called in to this administrative hearing and they have to basically say, sorry that we held a cookout on college campus. This was a piece of grass that was right on the edge of campus. Had they stepped 1 foot over, they would have been back on the free soil of Florida and Governor DeSantis's Florida, and it would have been a completely fine. There would have been zero restitution the university could have taken against the Turning Point USA chapter. But as it was, they were on a piece of grass owned by the university, and they got snitched on for holding like a gathering, even though they're in the free state of Florida. These are islands of totalitarianism. I remember when I first started working with Charlie, I thought it was a ridiculous thing to say. I was like, Charlie, it's too hyperbolic. I mean, you know, shouldn't we be reaching out and creating, some sort of common ground with these administrations? And it's like, okay, maybe. But he's actually, once again, proven right, a little ahead of the curve. Islands of totalitarianism. These universities are absolutely beholden to the tyranny of the minority. The loudest voice in the room is always this minority voice, but they're the loudest and they're the most upset. And guess what? The university always folds to them. That's why we have to put pressure on governors, on state legislatures, especially in red states, because folks, if you think this is bad now, if you think universities are imposing mandates now, and on their high horse and this moral authority to do so now, wait until Delta, Lambda, Epsilon comes. Now, that may sound like a bad fraternity, but it's not. These are just COVID variants that they're all saying are probably going to be resistant to the vaccine anyways. So here's the irony, folks. They're going to mandate you get a vaccine that Delta, Lambda, Epsilon variants aren't even probably going to be – it's not going to be effective against. And again, this is not – a fraternity, a poor-sounding white supremacist fraternity on campus somewhere. It's just Delta variant, Lambda variant, and Epsilon variant. Now, what's hilarious about this controversy of medical apartheid is these are the same people that every four years calling Trump a Nazi. And they labeled everything at the border a Holocaust. And now one time something is said accurately, and they're all up in arms. He's trending on Twitter. All these articles written about it. This is the left, folks. Don't let them play word games with you.
Did you ever read the fine print that appears when you start browsing in incognito mode? It says that your activity might still be visible to your employer, your school, or your internet service provider. How can they even call it incognito? To really stop these people from visiting, from seeing the sites you visit, you need to do what I do and use ExpressVPN. Think about all the times you've used the Wi-Fi at a coffee shop, a hotel, or even at your parents' home. Without ExpressVPN, every single site you visit could be logged by the admin of that network. And that's still true when you're in incognito mode. What's more is your home internet provider, I'm talking about Comcast, AT&T, or whatever, can also see and record your browsing data. ExpressVPN is an application, it's an app, that encrypts all of your network data and reroutes it through a network of secure servers so that your private online activity says just that, private. ExpressVPN works on all of your devices and it's super easy to use. So stop letting strangers invade your online privacy. Protect yourself at expressvpn.com/charlie. Use my link at expressvpn.com/charlie. That's expressvpn.com/charlie to learn more.
Who shot Ashley Babbitt? It's a question that has really been an unanswered, bubbling up cauldron of curiosity, passion. It's fueled a lot of speculation, I can tell you that. We've been asking this question since it happened, January 6th. We've been investigating. We've been told rumors. We get dozens, if not hundreds, of emails with tips from you, the listeners, at freedom@charliekirk.com. Saying, hey, have you looked into this person? Oh, look at this clip with the, you know, we saw the clips with the bracelet and the gun. We've been hearing a lot, folks. We've been watching and monitoring. We made a decision, a conscious decision, to not get out over our skis out of the respect for the individuals that could be named, okay? Because there was actually one officer that was incorrectly named. And it was not a good thing. It was not fair to that person. Now, that being said, enter Paul Sperry. Now, Paul Sperry is a Hoover Institute media fellow, really smart guy. He's come out with a pretty incredible report here from Real Clear Investigations. When somebody like Paul Sperry and Real Clear publishes something, then that is something to behold. Now, what Trump was saying is absolutely true. Now, had this happened to anybody else, if the shoe was on the other foot, if it was a liberal getting shot, then we would have absolutely known the identity of this police officer within seconds. But because it was a rioter, a part of the siege on the Capitol, we didn't get to hear about the name of this person. And Paul does it actually a really, really great job of framing what this double standard with the U.S. Capitol Police is. And Trump was highlighting this. He said it had this been any other person, we would know right away, but we have not known for 6 months. Okay, now Paul starts his piece in Real Clear like this. He says, most police departments, including Washington, D.C.'s Metropolitan Police, are required to release an officer's name within days of a fatal shooting. Not the U.S. Capitol Police, which is controlled by who? That's right, by Congress, and answers only to Congress, namely, I'm adding this, this isn't in the piece, Speaker Pelosi. It can keep the public in the dark about the identity and investigation of an officer involved in a shooting indefinitely, which is what happened with the January 6th shooting of Ashley Babbitt, an unarmed protester in the U.S. Capitol riot who was fatally wounded by a plainclothes police lieutenant as she attempted to breach a set of doors inside the building. For the past 6 months, as Congress has proposed legislation to reform police departments across the country, this is the rub here, folks. This is almost too good to be true. For the past 6 months, as Congress has proposed legislation to reform police departments across the country, the Capitol Police has stiff-armed government watchdogs, journalists, and even lawyers for Babbitt who have sought the identity of the officer and additional details about the shooting. The USCP, the U.S. Capitol Police, still refuses to release his name in stark contrast to recent high-profile police shootings around the nation. Did you catch that? So while the Democrats are pushing in this righteous fight for transparency, for accountability. And by the way, I have no problem with police having to wear cameras on their person. I think it's fine. I think it's great. I also think that schools, we should have cameras in schools, as has been the controversy of the week. We absolutely should have both. I mean, by the way, on that note, this became a whole controversy. We were calling for cameras in schools. I think we pulled a tweet of, as far as March of last year, saying that we should have cameras in schools. Nevertheless, it's in the news again, and we should absolutely do so. There's nothing more important than our children. There's nothing more important than being able to pass along the values to the next generation. And what you have here, folks, is a bunch of radical leftists making a big deal about cameras that would expose a bunch of radical leftists. That's all it is. So we should expose them. Nevertheless, these radicals have been pushing for transparency and accountability in our police departments all across the country. It's become this civil rights guarantee, this cause du jour, this cause célèbre. And yet, one exception to that rule is the Capitol Police Department. This is an irony and a hypocrisy, and it's outrageous. It's an outrage, folks. We should not let it stand. In February, the USCP, the U.S. Capitol Police, issued a press release promising to share additional information once the investigation is complete. But Justice Department investigators closed their probe in April, clearing the officer of criminal wrongdoing in Babbitt's death, which the medical examiner ruled a homicide. Well, of course it was. We have it on tape. And last month, the D.C. police, which shares jurisdiction with the Capitol Police and has led the investigation into Babbitt's shooting, concluded its own internal review of the shooting without making any findings, according to spokeswoman Kristen Metzger. Still, the USCP continues stonewalling the public, according to the head of the police union. All right. So I think we have this clip. This is what's fairly interesting. We've got a new name that seems to be circulating. So again, I mentioned before that Special Agent David Bailey was wrongly fingered as the shooter, and we were very well aware of this mistake. That's why we have not come out and said this name publicly. But this new name, as revealed by Paul Sperry in Real Clear Investigations, and just to keep the suspense building, Paul Sperry, I mean, writes for the Wall Street Journal, New York Post, Hoover Institute media fellow. He's a very, very smart guy. Very, very good guy. You'll see him on Fox all the time. He names him. So we're going to name him. Lieutenant Michael L. Byrd. It's Lieutenant Michael L. Byrd. And this is what's interesting. We found this clip from a transcript on C-SPAN from the House Sergeant at Arms, where he cited Lieutenant Michael Byrd. Let's go ahead and play clip 54.
In terms of the communication with my staff,
okay,
in the Sergeant Arms, we don't control the Capitol Police radios. While we have the radios and can hear what is or is not going on, we do not interject during a crisis. We communicate with our staff via the cell phone, text message, and we were in close contact. The situation where you discussed where Officer Byrd was at the door when Ms. Babbitt was shot, it was our Sergeant-at-Arms employee who rendered the aid to her.
So hear that again. Listen to the end of this clip very carefully. It seems like the acting Sergeant-at-Arms might have let the name slip. And this is, again, from February 25th. This is a House hearing. This is both on C-SPAN. Here's what's funny about this. Both C-SPAN and CNN removed his name from the transcript. But we have that video right there. And hear what he said. The situation where Officer Byrd was at the door and Miss Babbitt was shot. Okay, so that's the transcript. You heard him accidentally slip Officer Byrd's name. Now, Byrd appears to match the description of the shooter. Again, this is from Real Clear, who video footage shows is an African-American dressed that day in a business suit. Jewelry, including a beaded bracelet and lapel pin, also match up with photos of Byrd. In addition, this is again Real Clear, We're not making this stuff up. Byrd's resume lines up with what is known about the experience and position of the officer involved in the shooting, a veteran USCP officer who holds the rank of lieutenant and is the commander of the House Chamber section of the Capitol Police. What's more suspicious, and which leads me to believe that this is, in fact, the person, this is the person who shot Ashley Babbitt. Following the shooting, Byrd's internet footprint was scrubbed. That's right, folks, scrubbed, including his social media and personal photos. He was also placed on administrative leave right after the January 6th incident. His attorney would neither confirm nor deny that the 53-year-old Byrd is the shooter and warned that disclosing his name poses a safety risk to the officer. So here's what's interesting. You'd say, well, Charlie, because normally Charlie's hosting, Andrew, why would you not just put a FOIA in? Freedom of Information request. Here's the kicker. Congress has exempted the USCP from Freedom of Information Act requests. You can't even get this, folks. The Secret Service is subject to FOIAs. The Secret Service, which protects the President of the United States, is subject to FOIAs. And yet, Congress, which controls the USCP, has exempted the Capitol Police. Okay? That's another outrage. Why should Pelosi's own police, which, by the way, is expanding all across the country, they're setting up outposts in California and Florida, all over the place, in using January 6th as an excuse, they sit back, refuse to comply with requests of the family that lost, this is a servicewoman, an Air Force veteran of our country from Orange County, California. They won't tell anybody who shot their family member. Unarmed. By the way, the only bullet that was fired in the January 6th incident was shot at Ashley Babbitt, and she's the only one that lost her life that was not from natural causes. We know that. Even Officer Sitnik died probably of a stroke. Folks, this is an outrage. But at least we have answers now. Thank you to Mr. Sperry for this incredible report, Real Clear Investigations. We'll get this up on charliekirk.com so you guys can see it yourself. Lieutenant Michael Byrd likely shot Ashley Babbitt.
Look, I know a lot of you are pushing back against vegan culture. Now, maybe you're vegan, and that's fine. I do that sometimes, too. You know, sometimes I get the fake burgers and all this, but when I do that with my wife, I have to be honest. I feel to myself, I miss the real meat. Do you know that you might be eating Chinese meat? That's right. You might be eating meat from China. Now, the way to ensure that you're not eating Chinese meat is GoodRanchers.com. I get my meat from GoodRanchers.com. They send you a big box. Now, I know a lot of you want to impress your neighbors. Maybe you got the new lawnmower. Maybe you built the new pool. But if you all of a sudden want your neighbors to be clamoring and chattering, whispering and gossiping, and saying, I wish I had what the Smiths or the Joneses or the Schmachtenbergers or any of the other people have, then all of a sudden you want them to say, I am so unbelievably ready. Wait till you get a box of marbled, genuine American meat delivered to your door. You see, my friends at Good Ranchers, they've traveled America. You know the Johnny Cash song? I've been everywhere. That's them. They've been everywhere, all across America, searching for the best meat for you. You see, they met with the actual farmers. They're pro-farmer. And here's how it works. They deliver it to your home. You could subscribe, and then you know, like clockwork, boom, 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 I'm getting meat to my home. If you subscribe to any one of our packages, you'll save 20% with each purchase. Subscribing brings the cost down per meal. Get steakhouse quality for less than $5 a meal. And by the way, the emails that I get at freedom@charliekirk.com, I think this is bringing families back together. I really do. I think Good Ranchers is a way to solve the what I call Applebee's chaos. Where do we want to go to eat? Everything's booked. I guess we'll go to Applebee's. You end up fighting. And that's what happens when you go out, unless you have meals at home. You see, bring the family back together. No more grocery store guessing game. No more Chinese meat. Know where your meat will come from. with GoodRanchers.com and support American farmers. Here's the one thing that I like about Good Ranchers. I'm not selling you some obscure thing. This is not like a Johnson rod for your car. It's not some sort. You all need to eat. So therefore, I'm putting something that I know you all need. So you might as well get the food that supports this program, supports America, supports the ranchers, and brings smile to the downtrodden at goodranchers.com/Charlie. That's goodranchers.com/Charlie. $20 off and free express shipping. 100% American beef. You guys will love it. goodranchers.com/Charlie.
New effort to stop mandatory vaccination of college students, the healthiest cohort in the country, 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds, the likelihood that they're going to die if they get COVID is infinitesimally small, especially when we don't know anything about this vaccine, when we don't know the long-term effects, certainly. Now, I'm not saying I'm anti-vaccine. I'm not saying I'm pro-vaccine. I'm saying I'm vaccine agnostic. That is the position of Charlie. That is the position of the show. And, you know, hats off to Charlie and to Turning Point USA for stepping into the gap, fighting back against these vaccines, these mandates for our young people when we don't know the long-term effects. And I don't mean to go back to the Tucker Carlson well so much, but, I mean, Charlie was on his show last night announcing this major new initiative to fight back against mandatory vaccines. And he happens to just be in the news in another way regarding NSA spying. So everybody on the right is now saying Tucker Carlson has been vindicated with his NSA spying claim. Because, if you'll remember, on June 28th, last week, he came out and he said, hey, you know, we've been getting spied on, and there is a person in the know from our intelligence community that has confirmed and affirmed that they are spying on me. They're taking my emails, and the only way that this person would know is by having my emails, because I haven't talked about this situation with anybody else. Well, a report came out from Jonathan Swan over at Axios that said that Tucker was talking to U.S.-based Kremlin intermediaries about setting up an interview with Vladimir Putin shortly before the Fox News host accused the National Security Agency, the NSA, of spying on him. Sources familiar with the conversations tell Axios. Okay, so here's... let's just get some of the sound here. Cut 51 of Tucker himself explaining this. Cut 51.
Yesterday, we learned that sources in the so-called intelligence community told at least one reporter in Washington what was in those emails, my emails. There was nothing scandalous in there, thank God. We're happy to report that. Late this spring, I contacted a couple of people I thought could help get us an interview with Russian President Vladimir Putin. I told nobody I was doing this other than my executive producer, Justin Wells. I wasn't embarrassed about trying to interview Putin. He's obviously newsworthy. I'm an American citizen. I can interview anyone I want, and I plan to.
That's right. So he's reaching out. And by the way, we'd sort of heard that there was intrigue around this particular situation. Now, here's the big picture. Carlson charges instantly became a touch point with the NSA. They denied that they were doing it. Now we find out he was trying to interview Putin. Journalists routinely, according to Axios, reach out to world leaders, including leaders of countries that are not allied with the U.S., to request interviews. When you go outside of the U.S. and you're talking to international leaders, can the NSA spy on you? It's unclear why the NSA would have done this, but what we do know now is that Tucker Carlson was reaching out to people on U.S. soil to help line up an interview with Vladimir Putin. And it looks as though, and this is the suggestion that Tucker Carlson is making, that the NSA was leaking these emails, or somebody was leaking these emails. Tucker Carlson certainly says that it's the NSA, in order to discredit him and to make him look like an anti-American, pro-Russian zealot. When he's saying, I have nothing to be ashamed of, this is absolutely illegal, which it is, and I'll get into why that is in just a second, and that he should be free to interview anyone he wants. Of course, that's true. He's an American. He should be. So here's how Axios's Jonathan Swan lays it out. He said, experts say there are several plausible scenarios, including legal scenarios that could help. And I think that's important that we say that. There's certain contexts in which this could be legal. Okay, the first and least likely scenario is that the U.S. government submitted a request to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, this is also known as the FISA court, to monitor Carlson to protect national security. That's possible. It's probably not it's probably not the most likely scenario here. A more plausible scenario, according to Jonathan Swan, Axios again, is that one of the people Carlson was talking to as an intermediary to help him get the Putin interview was under surveillance as a foreign agent. This is what we've been speculating on the show here, too. In that scenario, Carlson's emails or text messages could have been incidentally collected as part of monitoring this person. But here's the kicker, folks, and this is why I think Tucker should pursue this legally to the fullest extent of the law. In that scenario, his emails could have been collected. Okay. But Carlson's identity would have been masked in any intelligence reports. In order to know that the texts and emails were Carlson's, a U.S. government official would likely have to request his identity be unmasked, something that's only permitted if the unmasking is necessary to understand the intelligence. Okay. So what Tucker is saying here is that had my emails been intercepted by the intelligence community, I would have been listed as, you know, U.S. reporter, investigative journalist. It would have been abstract. It wouldn't have been specific. What Tucker's saying is that he was informed by an insider, a whistleblower, that his name was being thrown around within the intelligence community at the NSA, Tucker Carlson's emails, and that he had those emails leaked to a reporter in order to discredit him as anti-American, pro-Russian, pro-Vladimir Putin. So here's the technical piece of this, and we covered actually this last time I hosted the show. The U.S. government routinely monitors the communications of people in Putin's orbit who may have been discussing the details of Carlson's request for an interview. But under this scenario, too, Carlson's identity would have been masked in reports as part of his protections as a U.S. citizen. And in order to unmask his identity, that would have been a request through the FISA court. Okay. Tucker himself explains this in Cut 53. Let's go ahead and play Cut 53, Tucker explaining this very context.
So by law, I should have been identified internally merely as a U.S. journalist or American journalist. That's the law. But that's not how I was identified. I was identified by name. I was unmasked. People in the building learned who I was. And then my name and the contents of my emails left that building at the NSA and wound up with a news organization in Washington. That is illegal. In fact, it is precisely what this law was designed to prevent in the first place. We cannot have intelligence agencies used as instruments of political control.
That's exactly right. This is the third world. And this is a point that Tucker himself makes. This is third world banana republic style surveillance state tactics. Now, it would have been one thing had his name been masked, had he been his communication been swept up in a dragnet that was just observing and surveilling foreign agents. But to unmask and then leak to a journalist is third world banana republic nonsense. By law, the NSA is required to keep secret the identities of American citizens who have been caught up in its vast domestic spying operations. That is law. So Tucker Carlson should absolutely pursue this and see what sort of restitution he can get. Now, everybody's calling this a vindication for Tucker Carlson, and it is. That being said, there's one final point that I would be remiss if I did not share with you all on this story. The intrigue. This is, again, from Jonathan Swan. This could be legal. And I don't know if that makes this worse or better. But this could be legal, and we have to cover that. So two sources familiar with Carlson's communications. So, again, Jonathan Swan's doing investigations. He's got real sources that are confirming this actually happened. Said his two Kremlin intermediaries live in the United States, but the sources could not confirm whether both are American citizens or whether both were on U.S. soil at the time they communicated with Carlson. This is relevant. Again, I don't know if this makes it better or worse. If there's a technicality in the law which is being exploited and gamed by our intelligence agencies, you better believe they're going to game and exploit it. This is relevant because if one of these intermediaries was a foreign national and on foreign soil during the communications, the U.S. government wouldn't necessarily have had to seek approval to monitor their communications. Okay? If you're going to request interviews with foreign leaders, I mean, I think there is some expectation within journalist class that that would be subject to surveillance. The unmasking and the leaking to reporters, that's third world banana republic stuff. That being said, we have to be very clear what our issue is and what our issue is not, okay? So that is a big story, and it's getting lots of headlines. I do think Tucker has been vindicated. I think he's an absolute hero for exposing it.
Look, going to the post office is the worst. And look, finally life is returning some back to normal. I hope. Who knows? The summer is showing welcoming signs of something nice coming ahead. Finally, you can get back to enjoying life's little pleasures, like smiling at your neighbor. I hope you've been doing that already. Or seeing a movie. But going to the post office? No, do not go to the post office. So don't go to the post office. Instead, Stamps.com. Stamps.com is amazing, everybody. Stamps.com, we use it here at Turning Point USA. We use it here on the Charlie Kirk Show. Check it out at Stamps.com. Look, it brings the U.S. Postal Service right to your computer. It's super easy to use. It's seamless. So go to Stamps.com and check it out. Stop wasting time going to the post office and go to Stamps.com instead. There's no risk, and with my promo code Kirk, K-I-R-K, you get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com and click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Kirk. Stamps.com, never go to the post office again.
Luckily enough, we have a little bit of truth-telling from the mainstream news media. This is from Salvador Rizzo. The White House's slipshod claim that Republicans are defunding the police. Many of you have heard this report. Even Trump talked about it in his press conference yesterday, actually, which I thought was pretty funny. And actually, I was very glad to hear him bring this up and call a lie, because so much of what we do in this country, especially in the media landscape, this matrix world we're all living in, is they just lie, they gaslight. And you know what happens is they say a lie enough times, eventually it becomes the truth. That is the strategy that they're employing. I'm going to play cut 60. This is Jen Psaki implying that Republicans are actually the party that wanted to defund the police.
But part of his announcement is also ensuring there's specific guidance to communities across the country to ensure that they have funding to get more community police around the country, something that was supported by the American Jobs Plan that was voted into law by Democrats just a couple of months ago. Some might say that the other party was for defunding the police. I'll let others say that, but that's a piece.
Now, White House advisors are trying to turn the tables on the GOP with new talking point. That's exactly what it is. It's a talking point. It's a strategy. They're trying to play you, claiming it's actually Republicans who are working to defund the police. Richmond, a former Democratic congressman who leads the White House Office of Public Engagement, said on Fox News that Republican lawmakers opposed a $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief bill, which included $350 billion. We throw these numbers out like they're nothing. $350 billion. And state and local aid. Many local governments are tapping those emergency funds to patch budget holes, hire officers, and avoid police layoffs. So then this is what brought up the conversation with Ms. Psaki. Psaki bombed in that particular instant. And this is actually an exchange with Peter Ducey. So Peter Ducey then asked this amazing question, which, you know, thank God for Peter Ducey. He's the one guy in there that's actually hanging tough. He's asking the real questions. He destroys this line of reasoning by saying, which Republican ever told you they didn't support the American Rescue Plan because they wanted to defund the police? Well, of course, the answer is no one. Not one Republican has ever called for defunding the police. Not one. Not a single one. Never. So let's define what it means to defund the police. This is from the Washington Post. A popular movement among some liberal activists. This is mainstream as it gets, defund the police. If you guys remember when all the rioting was going on last summer and into the fall, defund the police was like about as popular and mainstream as it gets. So this is Washington Post. Again, only in a rare instances are proponents calling for the outright elimination of police departments. Yeah, right. They've literally tried it in Minnesota, failed. They tried it in Portland, failed. Advocates generally want to redirect some funds now spent on police forces to items such as education, public health, housing, and youth services. So what they say is that Biden is actually – so this is why we don't get four Pinocchios. This is ridiculous. But he's advocating for something called community-oriented policing services, COPS hiring program, which provides funds for local police departments to bolster their ranks. Okay. In President Donald Trump's budget last year, $156.5 million was provided for COPS hiring. Biden would boost that to $388. So they're saying, oh, look it. Biden's not for defunding the police, but you and I all know the truth. This is three Pinocchio, should be four from the Washington Post. We know that the only party that's interested in defunding our police and demonizing them is the Democrats. Folks, I want to cover January 6th. We covered who killed Ashley Babbitt, and I think that was an important conversation. Lieutenant Byrd is the man that we have now found out is probably likely the person that killed Ashley Babbitt. We'll find out if that's ultimately verified. Let me see here. So we know that there has been a massive double standard when it comes to the way that individuals involved in the January 6th breach have been treated compared with individuals that were rioting in the spring and summer of 2020. And now this letter is a little bit old, but it's important because it is signed by the Honorable Ron Johnson, who's just been an absolute titan lately. That guy is just on fire. He's hitting dingers left and right. Ron Johnson, Senator from Wisconsin, God bless you. Senator Mike Lee, great friend of the show. Senator Ted Cruz, also a friend of the show. Tommy Tuberville, Rick Scott, all great guys. Here we go. So they wrote this to Merrick Garland, who's a real gem, by the way. I have a theory on Merrick Garland that he's just about the worst. He's probably the worst. You know why Merrick Garland is bad? It's because he's so understated. He's kindly and old and sort of calm in his delivery. You know, there are certain attributes that make it harder to attack. But then when he speaks and when he goes after Georgia for their election integrity law, he's like a snake. He's a viper. He's making allegations that are simply unfounded. Anyways, he's like he's the pit bull for the Biden administration, but he comes off like he's a chihuahua. Well, maybe that's even too mean. I'm not a big chihuahua fan. Sorry, folks, if you're fans of chihuahuas. Little dogs and me, we're not so happy together. Okay, so this is June 7th was when this was written, and I love this framing because, folks, we know that these are essentially political prisoners being held in solitary confinement. Okay. And why do we know that? It's because we've got these senators writing this letter to Merrick Garland asking some amazing questions. Now, they start off the letter. Let me just summarize it for you. They start off the letter by saying, hey, we all stand against trespassing in the Capitol. Obviously, we're not for that. And we think that those responsible should be held accountable, especially those who organize any of this. And we join all Americans in the expectation that the DOJ's response to the events of January 6th will result in rightful criminal prosecutions and accountability. Okay. But then they bring up spring and summer of 2020. They say, rightfully, individuals use peaceful protests across the country to engage in rioting and other crimes that resulted in loss of life, injuries to law enforcement officers, and significant property damage. They bring up the federal courthouse in Portland, which is, as they say, been effectively under siege for months. This is 100% true. Property destruction and the billions, insurance claims, $2 billion. Check this out. This is actually a DOJ report, and they compiled some of this. And this is all the way from back in last year. This number is probably much higher now. They said one federal officer was killed, 147 147 federal officers were injured, and 600 local officers were injured during the protest, frequently from projectiles. Let me say that again. 600 local police officers were injured. Absolutely dramatic. I'm not shocked. It's just we never talk about this. There were a loss of burglaries during this time. There was a loss of 1,116 firearms, 876 reported arson, 76 explosive incidents, and 46 ATF arrests. The DOJ basically didn't punish any of those folks. And this is not the first time that this has happened. It says, it appears that individuals charged with committing crimes at these events may benefit from infrequent prosecutions and minimal, if any, penalties. Well, of course, because they are on the right side of the political issue here. They're on the right side of history. It's a little bit cliche, that expression for me now. But to contrast, this is what the senators, the good senators, say. To date, DOJ has charged 510 individuals stemming from the Capitol breach. DOJ maintains and updates a web page that lists the defendants charged with crimes committed at the Capitol. Meanwhile, we had to dig and dig and dig and wait months to find out who killed Ashley Babbitt. But they've got a website where you can actually look at the names and the defendants, their case numbers, case documents. No such database exists for alleged perpetrators of crimes associated with the spring and summer 2020 arrests. Here we go. So they've got some questions. They outline about, 18 amazing questions. This is their question for the spring and summer of 2020 unrest. Did federal law enforcement utilize geolocation data from the defendant's cell phones to track protesters associated with the unrest in the spring and summer of 2020? If so, how many times? And then they asked that same question about January 6th, because of course they used geo-tracking of the protesters. Anyways, it's very, very important what's going on here. We've got some sound I want to play related to this topic. Let's go ahead and play Cut 62. This is a segment. This is Julie Kelly. Let's go ahead and play it, and we'll get to it on the backside.
I mean, this is a constitutional humanitarian crisis, especially for the people who have been charged and held in solitary confinement like they're hardened criminals. At the same time, the same Justice Department, who has made public that they are releasing the same type of rioters, actually people charged with far more dangerous crimes, releasing them, expunging their records, and, obviously encouraging more violence because they always get away with it. But if you're on the political right, you will not. You will be punished severely.
And that's the crux of the issue here, folks, is if you are on the wrong political side, the institutions in this country have been so corrupted under the Biden administration that we can never, ever hope to get equal application of the law. And this is what the good senator's letter to the snake, Merrick Garland, are exposing. Now, I want you to think back to the protests on Inauguration Day 2017. Trump obviously upsets the political establishment. There is widespread protesting. We've got Madonna talking about blowing up the White House. Cars are on fire in Washington, D.C. In that protest, 234 arrests. Remember, this was so I'll never forget that day during the inauguration, where the big question was, is Donald Trump going to get out of the limo and actually walk down the street exposed? And I believe that was Pennsylvania Avenue. But regardless, the question was he going to get out? We didn't know if he was going to get out of the car. And I remember sitting there watching the footage. I was at home. I was watching it on TV. I was not in D.C. But I remember watching it going, don't get out. Don't get out. We need you too much. Don't get out and have somebody do something horrible and awful. And there was riots everywhere. I'll never forget as well, the Washington Post article that 19 minutes after the inauguration said the journey to impeach Donald Trump has now begun. 19 minutes in. Don't get out of that car. There was mass chaos in D.C. that day. 234 arrests, zero jury convictions. That's right. So You could make the case that D.C. was under siege by Antifa, by far-left radicals that meant much harm to the president of the United States. Yet not a single defendant was found guilty by juries in D.C. Superior Court. 21 defendants did plead guilty before trial, and one, Dane Powell, served jail time, 4 months behind bars for throwing rocks and bricks at police officers and shattering store windows. So just one served time. It's just incredible, the difference. So here's what we know about January 6th, by contrast. By mid-May, at least 440 people had been arrested on charges related to the Capitol breach. This is according to the DOJ, including at least 125 charged with assaulting or impeding law enforcement. Okay, so 440 people had been arrested on charges. And of 398 defendants listed on the Justice Department's Capitol breach case site, at least 330 were listed on the site or in federal court records and as released from custody. Okay, so this is what they're saying. They're saying that 75%, and you know, there's this piece in The Guardian that was making sense of this, and I have a totally different take. They're saying all these people are getting released from this for the breach. 75%, that's very unusual. Normally, it's only about 25% apparently. What that is, folks, is not the federal law enforcement being lenient on the January 6th breach. It's that they went so far out of bounds at the beginning to appease the media uproar that they spread their net far too wide. They were collecting grandmas off the street. They were spread their net so far that we should expect, honestly, about 98% of these people to be released. Should be far higher than 75%. But what else is very troubling, and this is what's very interesting, is that you've got Senator Elizabeth Warren actually standing up in defense of these January 6th political prisoners, because many are in solitary confinement. And I want to play this clip from a father who is talking about Ned Lang, father of a January 6th detainee. Play cut 56.
Jake has not had a haircut in 6 months now. He has no access to when Steve goes down and talks to him, he has no access to a private interview with an attorney. He has no access to the law library. It's like we're in a third world country. It's unbelievable. From what he's telling me and what I'm hearing,
he's being held, no haircut, solitary confinement, 23 hours and only 1 hour out.
Look, we all complain about the woke industrial complex, the woke Marxists that are running our schools, that are running media, and yes, also running our banks. You see, look, the real estate market, it's red hot. Tyler, he just sold his home and he said, Charlie, I've never seen the market so unbelievable. So maybe you want to go buy a home. Maybe they're taking advantage of low interest rates. With all the economic uncertainty underway, people need to invest in real stuff. So here's a rule of thumb. We here are a solution-based show. So if you don't like the woke nonsense, stop using the woke banks. It's that simple. No more Wells Fargo. No more JP Morgan. No more Goldman Sachs. No more big bank culture. Instead, I have these two great friends, and they do a great job. It's Andrew and Todd. Andrew Del Rey and Todd Avakian. They love the Lord. They are Christians. They are honest. They are straight shooters. And they are on a mission to make sure that you guys can refinance but be told the truth. Look, when I took out mortgages for the properties that I have, it was one of the worst experiences I've ever been through. Yeah, some of the people were very nice, but I could tell you the bank itself was just so bureaucratic and hard to work with. My producer, Andrew, is working right now with Andrew and Todd to fight against the woke banking culture. And he tells me that they're part counselors, part financial counselors, planners, and they're really helping him. So here's the thing. Andrew and Todd are mortgage bankers. They're not brokers. That means Andrew and Todd and their team can take care of your loan personally from start to finish. You'll likely actually talk to Andrew and Todd yourself. So right now, maybe you're walking or you're like, I want to refinance the home, or maybe I'm under the process. Stop it. No more Wells Fargo. They're funding $1 billion to BLM Incorporated. Drives me nuts. Bank of America shut off a U.S. Senate candidate who was running in Senate in Delaware, just shut off their bank account. Instead, let's support the good guys. I know a lot of you right now say, Charlie, I want to support the good guys. Let's do it together, okay? So here's how you do it. Go to andrewandtodd.com. That's pretty easy to remember, right? Andrew, Todd, andrewandtodd.com, or call 888-888-1172. That's 888-888-1172, and say, hey, I want to talk to Andrew and Todd. Charlie Kirk told me to call. In fact, I just had this unbelievable meeting with them. We talked theology. We talked the church. They're conservative. They're unbelievable. And all you have to do is call them up. Just go to andrewandtodd.com, call 888-888-1172. That's 888-888-1172 and say, Andrew or Todd, I would like to speak to you. Charlie Kirk sent me. And I'm telling you, you'll probably get them on the phone unless they're traveling or handling some crisis. They take a lot of the phone calls themselves. Great people. andrewandtodd.com. No more woke banks. Let's work together to crush the back of woke Wall Street and support the good guys. andrewandtodd.com.
Talking about January 6th, I'm just going to touch on one final piece. There was just this amazing piece that just came across the wire. And I just, it was like on cue that it was too good to be true. And it's White House, there's a briefing that started while we've been on the show. And Press Secretary Psaki starts singing happy birthday to a Reuters reporter and then launched into a description of January 6th as, quote, one of the darkest days in American history. I mean, this, you cannot make this stuff up. And I want to talk about the teachers unions and CRT, and I'm going to get to that. I don't have enough time because the show just goes so fast. But the point is, this is hilarious. Let's go ahead and play Cut 63.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Happy Thursday. Is it Thursday? I said happy Thursday. Well, I was going to say, I did hear it was Steve Holland's 29th birthday. So happy 29th birthday. I'm a terrible singer, but I am willing to lead a song here if you are all game. Who's with me? Someone here has a good voice. Happy birthday.
Then, folks, they sing happy birthday to this Reuters reporter, and then she seriously, literally, next line, January 6th is one of the darkest days in American history. I want to draw the comparison. Now, imagine this. There's a bunch of congresspeople, congressmen and women. I think it was both men and women. It might have just been all men. Practicing baseball. Representative Steve Scalise gets shot, almost dies. Many more are targeted by a Bernie Sanders supporter. More congresspeople get shot, targeted, harassed, attacked at a baseball practice, and we do not set up a commission. We don't demonize Bernie Sanders. None of that happens. And yet, one person gets shot. Her name's Ashley Babbitt. They don't tell us who shot her. We have to find out through real clear investigations today. Good job for them. And we've got this January 6th commission that was turning into a total partisan witch hunt again. And thankfully, Minority Leader McCarthy has changed his tactics, and he's actually going to put some real conservatives on that committee to push back. But this is this crazy double standard that's driving so many of us absolutely nuts as we watch this unfold. It's absolutely, absolutely hard to watch. And if you just contrast this kumbaya moment that Press Secretary Psaki has with the White House press corps, and you contrast that to Kayleigh McEnany, who's a good friend of our show, and what she's had to go through, it's absolutely astounding, and it's very, very, very hard to watch. But yet, listen, we collect this stuff so you guys don't have to. Listen, we have been at the front lines of pushing for parents to get involved in the school boards, fighting back, fighting for integrity and transparency in our schools, government schools, and frankly, folks, pull your kids out of these places, especially if you live in a blue district. But nevertheless, Randy Weingarten, who is the president of one of the largest teachers unions in the country, has doubled down. They bring Ibram X. Kendi, the rock star academic, to go speak as their keynote at their conference. Let's play cut 59, and I'm going to explain what she does here. Cut 59.
Critical race theory is not taught in elementary schools or middle schools or high schools. But culture warriors are labeling any discussion of race, racism, or discrimination as CRT to try to make it toxic. They are bullying teachers and trying to stop us from teaching students accurate history.
Ha ha! Accurate history. There is, that couldn't be any further from the truth, but this is what they're doing now. They're moving the goalposts on us, and you need to keep tabs on it. From Katie Pavlich. Oh, I see what they're doing here. They're now rebranding and making it seem like critical race theory and common history are the same thing. They're not. This is not history. This is anti-white racism. Straight from the teachers' unions, folks. We had to cover it. It's Biden's America. Racism abounds, and it's all at us and you. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. That was really fun to be with you. Charlie's going to be back in the seat tomorrow, so please keep subscribing, keep downloading. Send us your comments, your suggestions, your ideas, and questions at freedom@charliekirk.com. That's freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you like what we do here, we would be so honored if you would support us. Go to charliekirk.com/support. That's charliekirk.com/support. I want to thank some of you that have come up big in the recent hours even. Coming through. I want to thank Philippe from Waco, Texas. I want to thank Carrie from Bixby, Oklahoma. Very generous. Thank you, Carrie. I want to thank Lewis from New Hope, Pennsylvania. These are amazing people. These are amazing people that are coming up and supporting our show because they believe in what we do, and we're so honored. We are so grateful. It means the world to us to have all your guys' support. So send your questions, comments, concern, praise, confusion at freedom@charliekirk.com. We'll be back tomorrow with Charlie. It was an honor. Talk to you soon.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.